Welcome to What She Said. I'm your host, Candace Sampson. There are a lot of silly holidays that fill up our calendar year, but perhaps the one the ladies might find the oddest is National Laundry Day that falls on April 15th. Apparently, it's an opportunity to assess our laundry habits and teach our children to develop good ones. I don't know about you, but pretty much every day is laundry day in my house, and I'm going to pass and in fact go against the grain and make the 15th of April no laundry day. And I hope you'll join me. So leave the hamper in the closet, leave the ironing board where it is, and join me for the next hour for the things that really matter. Here's what's coming up. How did our federal budget rate when it comes to climate change? Lisa Gyu, National Director of Policy with the Suzuki Foundation, joins me to discuss how much progress this year's budget has made toward a clean economy and if it will be enough. Allie Payne is here to answer the age-old question parents everywhere ask of their teens: why are you not living up to your potential? As always, Allie has a fresh look on how to approach this with your teen and tips on how you can achieve better communication with your teen so that you can actually let that question go for good. Anne Brody is here with New Entertainment, and this week we take a look at the Palme d'Or-nominated film Showing Up, starring Academy Award nominees Michelle Williams and Hong Chau. Sophie Jarvis's feature debut Until Branches Bend is an ambitious marriage of eco-responsibility in the face of corporate disinformation. And Mrs. Maisel's manager, Susie, played by Alex Borstein, is ballsy, loud, and sharp-witted, and so is Alex Borstein in Meet Alex Borstein, Corsets and Clown Suits, available on Prime this week. AI is advancing at such a rapid rate that is leaving not only people, but the institutions and businesses they work in playing catch-up. Many small businesses, for example, have not likely drafted an AI policy for their workers or contractors they work with, and that puts them at risk. Kat Code from Binary Tat joins me to share what exactly the consequences are if you don't have an AI policy in place and what you should consider when drafting one up. Finally, April Aileen's music is charged with charisma and passion. A fan favorite at music festivals worldwide, April transcends genres, creating her own undefinable sound with influences coming from pop, rock, electronic, folk, and R&B. She joins me today to catch us up on all she's been doing before we play her new single, Catch Me, in its entirety for you. It's another full week at What She Said with interviews that empower, educate, and entertain. So let's jump in right now. Canada's federal budget was just passed, and in addition to expanded dental care, investments in Indigenous housing, and programs to address the ongoing opioid crisis, a clean economy was given top priority. Over the next 6 years, $20 billion has been set aside in tax credits to promote investment in green technologies. Is that enough? Will it make a big enough difference? Lisa Gyu is manager of national policy at the David Suzuki Foundation and joins me today to break it down. Welcome to What She Said, Lisa.
Thank you for having me.
So can you share your thoughts on the huge investment in clean electricity that was in this federal budget, and how will it impact Canada's position as a global leader in the clean economy?
Absolutely. Well, this was a very significant budget for climate action in Canada, and it needed to be. The most recent science report from the United Nations on climate change just came out a few weeks ago and underscored yet again that we are headed towards a tipping point. We simply cannot delay climate action, and the costs of action will become more and more expensive. So very timely then that this year's federal budget does propose a significant investment in clean electricity and clean technology manufacturing. These are actually two separate tax credits, and I want to break that down a little bit for you. About half of that amount, it could be considered, like half of the total budget spend is on the clean electricity side. And as you said, this is largely being delivered through a tax credit that will allow utilities, for example, doing what's needed to really bring Canada's electric grid to 100% renewable electricity by 2035, to access a 15% tax credit And we hope that that will be really significant. Already these forms of, already renewable energy is competitive. We see costs going down while costs of fossil fuel have been all over the map and generally higher, as anybody filling up their tank knows in the past couple of years. And the other side of that, so not only do we need to shift away from fossil fuels and rapidly accelerate renewable energies on the grid, we also can expect that the electrification of other sectors of the economy, and I just mentioned, filling up cars with gas. I mean, that's going to shift. That needs to shift. We need to move away from internal combustion engines and towards other forms of transportation, including electric vehicles. And that will increase. You know, we can expect that in many parts of the country, that's going to increase demand for electricity as well. So this is also about building the grid of the future that's capable of that's positioning Canada to be a leader in a green and clean economy. So yes, very timely. A couple of things that we saw as important in the announcement was that that although this is being delivered as a tax credit, non-tax entities are eligible. That was a bit of a concern. The finance minister that we had going into last Tuesday's budget reading, the finance minister had signaled that she was looking to at what the U.S. has done, and they have last summer adopted a very broad tax package offering these kinds of tax incentives for green technologies and electricities. And a concern that we had was that many of the major players in Canada are actually non-tax entities. So if you think of public utilities, for example,
right.
So what good does a tax credit do? But significantly, the budget did indicate that this is a refundable tax credit and that non-taxable entities will be eligible to still claim the credit. So that's really important. There is more that needs to be done that maybe a tax credit isn't, we need to broaden. There was some direct spending in the budget for clean electricity as well, but we probably need to see more of that in future years. For example, for grid modernization to address energy poverty situations. So the tax credit is really important, and there's going to be more that needs to be done.
So here's what I don't understand, though. We've invested now all this money into clean energy, a clean economy, which we understand is important. That's clear. But the budget still is publicly financing the fossil fuel industry. Does that not feel a little bit like cutting off your nose to spite your face? This doesn't make sense.
Yes, absolutely. This budget failed to make progress on Canada's commitment to end fossil fuel subsidies. I completely agree. That simply does not make sense. Even worse, this new clean electricity tax credit, as important as it is, has one major design flaw, and that is that the budget specifies that new natural gas facilities, if coupled with carbon capture and storage technologies, will be eligible for this tax credit. And that's simply wrongheaded. We know that fossil fuels are driving the climate crisis. We know that the future of, powering the future is not going to be done by fossil fuels. So there's a transition period that's needed that's in front of us right now for sure. But our public investments should not be going to incent the establishment of new natural gas facilities. That's completely that was a very surprising, disappointing aspect of an otherwise good news story, I think. So that's for sure a problem. And I think what we're looking for, again, last week was the budget. It's not the entirety of climate policy has to be effective, has to be broader than the budget. The budget's a very important piece of it. Canada needs to do more to end fossil fuel subsidies, and there will be additional investments needed. Every year's budget needs to be a climate budget, essentially. But we also can't forget the importance of the regulatory side. And here the government has committed actually to bringing in what they're calling a clean electricity regulation. And they've promised that the commitment is that this will be a regulation that requires all electricity generation to be net zero by 2035. And we're still waiting for the regulation to be published, the draft regulation to be published for comment and then finalized. That needs to happen very soon. The government is committed to having that regulation in place by the end of the year. So the we are expecting the draft in the coming weeks or month. And it will be keeping a close eye out for what that what the detail there is on natural gas. Because as much as the fossil fuel industry has tried to kind of sell us natural gas as a clean alternative to coal, and surely we do need to get rid of, coal is definitely needs to be on its way out. We've already got a regulation in place to that effect. Gas is not the solution that we're looking for, and ultimately won't be the answer to climate change, and doesn't need to be, is the other thing I should add. The David Suzuki Foundation has published a study last year looking at pathways to achieve that 100% net zero, 100% zero emissions grid by 2035. And the analysis shows that it is possible to meet Canada's electricity needs by boosting renewables. We don't need recourse to natural gas, and we don't need fossil fuels on our grid. So certainly, we will be looking to the regulations to sort of correct for this confusing signal in the budget and ensure that we're giving utilities the right signal that this is not the time to be investing in natural gas production. This is the time to be phasing out fossil fuels, accelerating the phase out of fossil fuels and the shift to renewables.
So we have about 30 seconds left. Was there anything else in the budget, though, that was a positive for our environment and the climate?
Yes, in fact, we're happy to see also the clean manufacturing tax credit that offers again tax credit to manufacturing facilities, including some grid scale electricity storage solutions that will be part of a renewable energy mix. Again, some troubling details in terms of other things included in that for eligible for that tax credit, including nuclear, for example. That we consider a dangerous distraction from the real need to invest in renewable energy. Also happy to see the government taking steps or announcing steps for what's called contract for difference, which is basically a guarantee on carbon pricing going forward, so that companies can invest in clean technology knowing that the price on carbon will continue into the future. The budget announced consultations, and we'll be looking on there's some important details to get right to make sure that has maximum advantage. But that security in the price of carbon is very important, is going to be a very important part of the piece of the puzzle as well.
Okay. The David Suzuki Foundation, I'm sure, has done a deep dive on this budget, on everything that's in there. And where can people find out more about how you are looking at it and how they can get involved?
Yeah, please come visit our website at davidsuzuki.org and look at our work on clean electricity and the opportunities, take action section of our website. Also, make some suggestions for letter writing campaigns that we see as critical for the next pieces, looking to the important climate regulations that will complement the budget investments and ensure Canada stays on track to achieve zero emissions electricity.
All right. Incredible. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
More of What She Said with Candace Sampson coming up.
CareToKnow.ca is a free resource where Canadians receive the latest health information, updates on new and existing treatments, and advice from Canadian doctors via email. After enrolling at CareToKnow.ca, you'll receive accurate and reliable information from trusted Canadian medical experts delivered directly to your inbox. Members can also access the website for information on a variety of health-related topics. Through resources like vodcasts, podcasts, and live webinars, Canadian experts discuss how to manage a number of medical conditions and provide the latest knowledge and advice to help you make informed decisions about your family's health with your own healthcare provider. To sign up and start learning more about the health matters that impact you most, enroll in CareToKnow.ca today.
And now back to Candace Sampson and What She Said.
Allie Payne, What She Says expert on the parent-teen relationship, is back, and this week we're taking a look at a complaint parents have had for generations. Why aren't my teens living up to their potential? Why do we get so invested in this question? Who decides what the potential is, and how can we not fall into this mindset in the first place? Are the questions we're all looking for, and thankfully, Allie has them. Welcome back, Allie.
Thanks for having me. I love this topic.
Well, I feel like this was something my parents said to me, their parents said to them. I mean, it's just generational. So let's break the cycle. Why or how do parents' expectations and the language they use impact their teen self-esteem?
Yeah, so that's a great start. So first of all, the living up to the potential is a shaming message for your teen, because it is a message that reinforces how they are failing you. And further to that, they are failing a probability that you have determined for their life, the way that you as an adult would use all of their opportunities that you have busted your butt to give them, the way that you would use as an adult all of their talents, skills, and inherent strengths. And they are not doing that. And you've already drawn this line out in the future using this crystal ball that you have of the life they're going to live. And it becomes, parenting and our children has become existential. So our children are a reflection of us. And when they fall short of that, we get very resentful and frustrated with how they are not doing with their life as we would do if we were them. Which inherently right there is the problem, because you're not them. And as far as I know, that crystal ball you have, it's probably just a snow globe you didn't put away at Christmas.
Yeah. And I think all of this, you know, even just broadly raising teenagers, there's that always that ongoing, I want to say conflict, but I think that's the wrong word. But this ongoing growth period where your teen is establishing their own identity and moving away from you, as they should. And
yes.
Parents are, you know, holding on for dear life, don't leave me. And it all sort of falls into that struggle, that ongoing struggle. So what advice would you give to parents? How do you establish what is that potential,
right,
that you think they're failing or not meeting? And
right.
How do you reframe it?
Okay, so when you are saying to your teenager, you're falling short of your potential, or teachers are saying it to your, I had both of that. I had parents and teachers saying it to me, that again, it's a shaming message, that it's a downward pressure on how your teenager is not doing something. Now, anytime we've proven psychologically, negative reinforcement, consistent negative reinforcement actually is demotivating. So I promise you, you'll just get more of the same. Upward pressure, uplifting, is about noticing what your teen is doing. Like, you're constantly pointing out where they're falling short. Look, look, come over here. It's really sparkly. You should do this. This is how, where you could be, where you should be. Wouldn't it be amazing based on your experience of life? But they're like, excuse me, but aren't you seeing what I am doing? And so long as you don't see what they are doing, you're creating more disconnection. And actually, it erodes their self-esteem and confidence. I'm not going to play it light. So upward lifting up from the bottom is about affirming and acknowledging what they are doing, affirming and acknowledging their strengths and character traits, not performance-based, not what they do with it, because they're not you. They're figuring out how to be them. It's going to be messy. It's going to be wrong. And put away your snow globe, because you have absolutely no scientific data that says they will hit that trajectory. In fact, if you think of all the things that happened in your life, how many of them were linear and exactly what your parents thought would happen? How many of them were plot twists? How many of them were sidesteps? How many of them were 10 steps back? Yet here you are, an almost employable human being who actually has a social life, friends, and some probably really hysterical, rich stories of your life, because it wasn't what your parents thought. Am I where my parents? I don't know, but it's been a lot of plot twisting. Your teenager's life is no different, and it's supposed to be that way. So this is about coming alongside them and saying, I love you for who you are. This isn't about what you achieve in this lifetime. This is about me helping you see your greatness, not because I'm constantly telling you you're falling short of that greatness, but because I will believe it even when you can't. I will be with you even when the results don't show up and we go, okay, interesting plot twist. Now what? I will be beside you as you figure out your life. Now, the first thing almost every parent, I know that you, I just heard you say it. So I just let them fail? No, that's not what I said. What I said is you go check your snow globe that belongs in the Christmas box that is not a way of telling the future. You do not have control over, and it is almost egotistical to believe that you have control over who your child becomes, because that is a one-way trip to resentment, judgment, disappointment, and disconnection.
Yeah, and control is a way of making you feel like the world is not falling apart on you. It's a very personal thing when you need to control every aspect of it. So I really love how you encourage open communication between parents and teens. And on this topic in particular, I feel parents really are going to want to know more on how they can change that back and forth with their teens. So that defensiveness is not always there on both sides. So how can people keep up with you? You have a master class coming up, right?
I do, yes. I've sent you the link. It's in the link in my profile in TikTok and Instagram. You can find me at Ali Payne on both of those, or my website, alipayne.com. There's a big banner at the top. You can click on that and grab that master class.
All right, incredible. Ali, thanks so much. We'll see you next month.
Thank you.
Anne Brody is here for Saturday Night at the Movies. And Anne, you and I just got off a nice week's holiday. So we're raring to go today. Tell me what's coming up in entertainment this week.
Well, it's an interesting week for sure. Opening with Michelle Williams and Hong Chow, who's so popular these days, in Kelly Reichardt's film Showing Up, which is her fourth collaboration with Michelle Williams. And Wendy and Lucy was one of them, which really was a runaway hit the year it came out. Just a story about a woman and her dog wandering America. Anyway, so they've got this real symbiosis together. She plays a sculptor who has a show coming up, but she can't get her act together because she's got all these personal issues she's dealing with. But it, you know, it's rich. It's full of their chemistry, the director and Williams, and a must-see.
Michelle Williams is such an understated actress. She really just brings such believability to every role she's in.
Yeah, with the exception of The Fablemans. I didn't buy that.
All right, well, that's another story. So tell me about Until Branches Bend.
Yeah, that's the Sophie Jarvis made this film in the Okanagan Valley in peach-growing country. And it covers a lot. It's about indigenous issues and a ruinous insect invasion to the peaches, a campaign against a girl who discovered it, unwanted pregnancy, and two sisters who really had no guidance lighting up. So there's an awful lot to unpack in it. But basically, the elder of the two sisters, they've totally raised themselves, no parents in the picture. She's a peach grader. So one day she's alone when this happens. She finds a peach that doesn't look good. She opens it up and it's absolutely rotten. She sees an insect she's never seen before. She takes it to her boss. He tells her not to tell anybody. Second boss tells her not to tell anybody. And by then, her conscience gets to her. She goes to a research center and that person blows the lid on an insect invasion that could ruin the harvest. So a lot going on here. And it's at the Review Cinema in Toronto and then in select theaters across Canada. It's interesting. It's tough. It's tough to watch.
All right. This next one, I had no idea, but I just started watching Mrs. Maisel and I am loving that show. I've just tore through every season and can't wait for the next season. But Alex Borstein is in it. And when I saw her name in your roundup this week, I was so delighted because she is so funny.
Oh my God. She's so smart. I think she's one of the better educated, more intelligent comics out there. She is just a force of nature. Now, she's Susie in the show, and Susie's not terribly feminine. That's the word I'm trying to say. She's tough and aggressive, and she kind of puts that to rights in this special Alex Borenstein corsets and clown suits. She presents herself as very feminine, and is a divorced mother of two, but she still has that searing wit, and the thing she's saying would turn your face blue, and her parents are in the front row of the theater. So it's just, you know, a family thing.
That's actually what made me laugh a little bit, was because in Mrs. Maisel, that happens too, where she's up on stage and she's doing this act in front of her parents. And I thought, I wonder if they got that idea from Alex Borenstein. So I'm totally going to go down a rabbit hole now learning more about her, because I just think she is so funny.
Oh, God, I love it. I adore
so that's
her.
On Prime, right?
Yes, it is. And I must mention these two musical mentors who are going to be with her, Eric Mills and Salva Ray. They're very much a part of the little trio that is on the stage. So watch for them.
All right. And you got a little tiny bit of horror this week with Leto.
Well,
tell me about it.
I said to the publicist, we don't do horror. And he said, well, that's a strong word. So I gave in, as I want to do. And it's Leda. It's a reimagining of the Greek myth. Do you remember the woman who was impregnated by a swan? And it's set in what looks like a southern U.S. plantation, abandoned except for her. She lives in the house. Her father died in a hunting accident. Her mother had tuberculosis. So it's what I call really wafty. Like, she's wearing these flowing white gowns. It's all in black and white. There's no words in it. And she just floats around the plantation and gets in the water. But then it really gets to you. It gets under your skin. And I must say, it's a very clever and unusual way to make a film. Very much worth watching. And it's on DVD or TVOD by Samuel Tressler IV.
All right, excellent. So you've got these and more on whatshesaidtalk.com, and we will see you next week.
We'll see you next week.
Thanks, Anne.
More with Candace Sampson and What She Said coming right up.
Are you looking for authentic, high-quality, and handcrafted seal fur and leather products created by Canadian Indigenous fashion designers and artists? Look no further than Proudly Indigenous Crafts and Designs, or Pick and D for short. Their e-commerce platform celebrates and showcases the skill and creativity of Indigenous fashion designers and artists. These innovative artists combine traditional sewing techniques with a contemporary approach to create modern and timeless accessories, footwear, clothing, and home decor products. And when you buy from Pick and D, you're not just getting a beautiful and authentic seal product, you're also supporting Indigenous communities. Proudly Indigenous products are natural, eco-friendly, and of the highest quality. So visit ProudlyIndigenousCrafts.com today and experience the beauty of Indigenous craftsmanship. Pick and D, proudly showcasing Indigenous fashion and supporting Indigenous communities. La, 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 la,
la, la, la. And now, back to What She Said. Here's Candace Sampson.
It's hard to believe that it's only been 3 months since ChatGPT came bursting onto the scene. In that time, AI has caused major disruptions at school and work, with some suggesting that things will be unrecognizable in most of our institutions and workplaces within months. If you're a business owner and haven't developed a workplace policy on AI, the best time to do that was December, and the second best time is immediately following this interview. Kat Code is the founder of Binary Tat and is committed to protecting your data. She joins me today with a message every business owner needs to listen to when it comes to AI. Welcome back to What She Said, Kat.
Thank you so much for having me.
I feel like we're going to be talking a lot as AI continues to evolve very, very quickly. But when it comes to the workplace, what are some of the key privacy concerns that companies should be aware of?
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So ChatGPT is an open AI, which means anybody can use it and anybody can put information in it. But it also means anyone can take information out of it. So if you are putting business information in, you are essentially putting your business information into a repository for other people to access.
And I think it's important too that we clarify right now that a second, it's not just ChatGPT. That's like saying, you know, facial tissue is Kleenex. Like there's lots of versions of that sort of open AI out there.
Yes, there are many versions. I mean, Bard is the new one that was just released as well that you can use. It's just to say we don't want to lump all AI into the same bucket. You can buy a tool for your company that uses AI or artificial intelligence to make decisions on behalf of your company. You can buy AI for chatbots so that, you know, when someone comes to your website and wants to ask a question, it uses AI to get them the answer. There are lots of different ways to use AI safely. The issue we have with this kind of AI, which is generative AI, which is the G from GPT, is the fact that we are creating data by having so many people add into it. And so again, if you're adding into it, you can also take out of it.
So you mentioned that there are three crucial aspects that should be included in a company policy to control the use of public AI tools. So can you elaborate on what those are and maybe provide some examples?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first and foremost is no personal information. So you shouldn't be putting anyone's personal information in there. An easy way to imagine this is imagine your friend who has their address book with your information in it decides to use ChatGPT to organize everything for them to say who lives the closest to them and who lives the farthest. Well, now they have input your address into ChatGPT. So now ChatGPT has this information about you, which you did not consent to give it. So as a company, when we collect data on behalf of individuals, we are responsible and accountable for that data. We have to ensure that that data is protected. And putting it into any kind of open AI system is not protecting that information. So that breaches any kind of privacy regulation we have, but it also puts our users at risk. So we do not want to put any kind of personal information belonging to any of your clients, patients, customers into any of these systems.
So it's not, you know, it's easy to say, okay, here is our company policy, but how do you enforce that? How do you make sure that employees are following that policy?
Yeah, so a lot of it is going to be about education. I mean, the ultimate thing here is for people to better understand that you are adding, it's like those bowls they used to have at bars where they said, hey, throw your business card in. That's what you're doing. You're throwing your business card into a public bowl and everyone can fish it out. So it's really going to be about everyone understanding that whatever you add in gets added everywhere. So this is not a trusted entity. Just because you're behind your computer screen at home doesn't mean that it's not taking that data. We had that originally with Google. People would Google everything under the sun. And then all of a sudden there was this awareness that, oh, if I'm Googling medical ailments, Google's actually tracking that. And they actually know what I'm searching. So we will get to the point where people realize, oh, wait a minute, I can't just put anyone's data in here. That could actually be a potential breach of me extending that data because I'm putting it in a public location. So that's the first rule. So the first rule is individuals' data, and that should be either employees or customers, really. The second one is company confidential data. So we've already seen people go, hey, you know that report I was trying to write on all of our finances? Well, I found a really quick way to do it. I put it in ChatGPT, and it spat it out for me in this beautiful way. So we're seeing people put company confidential data, company numbers, projections, all sorts of things into ChatGPT in order to better organize the thoughts around that. And you and I spoke recently on this, and we talked about how it was a great tool to organize thoughts. It's a great tool to say, hey, can you read this article for me and summarize it, or make an executive summary, or make a post about it. So imagine the applications for people that are sitting there going, oh, I've got a 25-page report that I need to present to the executives. How am I going to summarize this? ChatGPT.
Exactly.
So, yeah. That's the second one. And then the last rule is to ensure that anyone else you're working with is also doing the same. So we all have vendors we work with. Easy example would be an accountant. So I don't want my accountant deciding to throw all of my tax information into ChatGPT because it makes their life easier. So we now need to make sure we have a downstream effect. So we are collecting data about individuals and employees. We are looking at company data, and then we are also looking at who we hand that data to.
That is really interesting. I had actually not thought of that before, to ask companies I'm providing my information to what they do with it and if they will use it in AI. We're discussing preparing your business for use of AI responsibly. Kat, I feel like you're one of those people who likely reads the entire terms of service on anything you signed up for.
I do.
So tell me then, what are some of the real consequences of, you know, not controlling your company's AI policy?
Oh, so I mean, the real risk of harm is to the individuals or to the company who have lost the data. We are looking more now at fines for doing this. Both Italy and now Germany are looking to fine companies for using ChatGPT because it breaches their privacy regulations, because you do not have permission to put individuals' data into that engine. So if you are taking someone's data, like if I order something from Nike, I assume Nike is not putting my address, financial information, and name into ChatGPT. And if they did, I would say, hey, wait a minute, I didn't give you permission to do that. So some of these regulators are starting to fine companies, or they will be fining companies because they are starting to ban it. So from a financial perspective, because a lot of companies are like, yeah, I don't really care unless there's a monetary penalty. There may actually be one, but it will come down to either, again, confidential information that gets out that could compromise the company's success or the company's new products that are coming out, or it could come down to a privacy breach where information is leaked because someone has put it in there.
Do you think that we as a society are reacting quick enough to what's happening?
No, and so the analogy I have recently used is it's like a microwave. How many people do you know how a microwave actually works? We just assume it's technology. We stick stuff in it and other things come out, and then we're just really happy with it. This is not a microwave. So we have this approach like, I don't know how my phone works. It just works. I don't know how email, like how many people do you know who could actually explain to you how the electronic message from your phone gets to another phone? Like very few people. We just kind of take it for granted and it works. So when ChatGPT certainly hit the scene, everyone was just really excited about how cool it is. And because it's so user-friendly, nobody has bothered to kind of lift up the lid and see what's happening on the inside. We had discussed it very recently. It was like, you said, should we be using it? I was like, it's too soon. Not regulated. Nobody knows how to regulate it. So we've kind of opened the floodgates and now we don't know how to close the doors.
Well, you can't unring the bell. It's out there now. There's nothing we could do about it. So now it's about managing and adapting. But I think we do have to be reacting much quicker to this. So can you suggest some best practices for updating any vendor contracts, contractor contracts, that sort of thing, to be compliant with AI related policies?
Absolutely. So if you have contracts, which you should have contracts with everybody that you hand your information to or your company's information to, there should be clauses in there already. And if there aren't, please do add them, that discuss how they handle your individual data. So there should be something that says, hey, you know what? Even you're my accountant. I am giving you my data. You promise to safeguard it properly, which means you are putting the right technical safeguards, like you're not leaving it out on a desk. It's in a locked laptop. Like there should be some basic safeguards about how you're protecting my data. And then included in that list can be not putting them into any kind of AI engine. You can specify ChatGPT or Bard, but again, like you said, there will be others. This is the tip of the iceberg here. But certainly stipulating in there that whenever you give someone your data, they are only to use it for the purpose for which you gave it to them, and they are only to use it in tools that continue to safeguard the data with that expectation.
So I want to talk about that a little bit, because I feel like it's a bit of a push-pull on using ChatGPT in the workplace. A lot of people might say absolutely no use of it, which will leave them behind from a competitive standpoint, I feel. And then others may not care about putting guardrails in place. So what would a balance look like for workplaces?
Yeah, and that's something else you could certainly put in a policy or in your education is like, what can we use it for? So find ways to use it that are intuitive, that makes sense. Say, you know what, we've written these three articles and we want to stick them on social. They're public articles. Toss them in there. Actually, somebody as a joke, when I had posted on LinkedIn and said, you know, make sure you have a policy, and someone had actually gone into ChatGPT and said, write me a policy that protects against using AI. And it did. So like creating new material is fine. It's adding in anything that would be deemed confidential. Bigger companies have what's called data classification, and then they would have data that's like public, private, confidential, restricted data. Smaller companies probably don't. You probably don't think twice about it. It's just data to you. It's just information. But if it's information that's important enough for you not to share it publicly, that you wouldn't stick on your front door for people to read, then it's information that should not go in there. But yes, there are lots of ways you could use it. You could make tools to use it, but it just shouldn't be used for anything that would be deemed confidential.
All right. I feel like we're going to talk a lot in 2023 because it's only been 3 months and I am blown away by how far we have come with AI. I'm sure you are as well. So you're always talking about this and you really are committed to protecting people's data. So where can they keep up with you, Kat?
You can find me at catcode.com or binarytattoo.com. And I am still on Twitter at binarytat. And you can find me on LinkedIn as well, catcode.
All right. Excellent. We're going to put all of that in the liner notes when this goes out on podcast. Thanks so much for joining me today, Kat.
Thank you.
More of What She Said with Candace Sampson coming up. La, 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 la. And now back to Candace Sampson and What She Said.
Like a lightning bolt, April Aileen's music is charged with charisma and passion. Her live show consists of piano, guitar, and electronics and provides listeners with a range of emotions that leave you saturated in all the feels, wanting to dance but also contemplate life's meaning. A fan favorite at music festivals worldwide, April transcends genres, creating her own undefinable sound with influences coming from pop, rock, electronic, folk, and R&B. She joins me today to catch us all up on what she's been doing before we play her new single, Catch Me, in its entirety for you. Welcome back to What She Said, April.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, poor you having to deal with me with this head cold today. let's jump into it, though, because the song is fantastic, but the video, tell me a little bit about that.
It was really exciting. I was in the Halifax Harbor and had a catamaran for the day that I love sailing. I grew up sailing as a child with my dad. And it just so happened it was the maiden voyage of the largest aircraft carrier in the world, the USS Gerald R. Ford. And we got a little close to it and they came over and the US Navy had their artillery aboard their vessel and they asked us how close we were getting and what we were doing. And like, I'm filming a music video. And they were probably nicer to our boat than any of the boats out there that day trying to get close to the aircraft carrier. It was amazing.
Well, it might have been you in that red dress hanging off the edge of the boat, which I was feeling a lot of anxiety thinking, she's going in. I know she's going to go in.
Well, and so part of the plan, it was actually one of the most beautiful days in autumn in Halifax. I thought I'd need 3 layers because it was after Halloween. It was like coming up into November and it was just so inexplicably beautiful outside that I could wear the dress. And at the end of the video, the plan, you know, I was like, well, should I jump in the water? And they're like, well, you know, the water, it is going to be like November 1st temperature. Like, I don't know if you really want to jump in the water, but it's up to you. And I thought about it, but I didn't end up, instead of jumping in the water and getting really cold, which I don't mind doing for health benefits, decided to climb up the mast, and that was fun.
All right. Well, we're going to play Catch Me, but first tell people a little bit about the song and how you were inspired to write it.
It started off, just piano, sort of a jazzy, sultry tune. And I just kind of have always felt a bit that I'm on this mission, much like James Bond, a bit of a female Bond. And, you know, in this purpose to fulfill your mission in life, there's sacrifice along the way. And, you know, it's hard to have natural, normal relationships and things that, you know, most people have because you're on the road touring all the time and just, you know, everything for the purpose. And, you know, sometimes people don't understand. And so you know, I kind of wrote this song with the idea of I'm on the road, you can't catch me, you know, I can't tell you everything yet. There's some secrets. When it's safe, I'll get back to you. But right now I'm, you know, full speed ahead, adventure, who knows what the next day will bring kind of emotion. And then I teamed up with the producer in the UK and he built that electronic hook around it. And I just, yeah, the song has become one of my favorites on the album. I love it.
All right. Well, we're going to play it for listeners right now. But before we do, where can people keep up with you, April, and all that you're doing?
So the best place, really, it's, you know, April, A-P-R-Y-L-L, Aileen with an A, A-I-L-E-E-N, on all platforms. Instagram, I'm really active on Instagram, YouTube channel as well, and then Spotify, Apple Music, all that good stuff. So just April with a Y and two L's, Aileen with an A, and you'll find everything on there. So thank you so much.
Okay, perfect. We're going to put all of those links, by the way, up in podcast when this goes live there, if people want to find all the links there. Thanks so much for joining me again, April. It was nice to see you.
Nice to see you, Candace. We'll see you soon, I hope.
I say it's on my mind. I only ever look behind to see how far I've come. Oh, I say what I feel. I got one hand up on the wheel, the other on my gun. I walk a lonely road, oh, so far from home, 'cause I can't let it catch me.
That's it for What She Said this week. Stay up to date with my newsletter by signing up at whatshesaidtalk.com and be sure to follow on social at What She Said Talk on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for videos of these interviews and more. You can also catch me on TikTok at Candace Said. Finally, be sure to subscribe to What She Said with Candace Sampson wherever you listen to podcasts to catch past episodes and extended interviews. I'll be back next week with more What She Said.
I'm Andrea Askowitz. And I'm Allison Langer. And we are the hosts of Writing Class Radio, a podcast, but we are so much more. We have writing classes. So if you are looking for live online classes where you can join a community, write to a prompt, get feedback, and get better, check out all our classes at writingclassradio.com. And listen to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts and at writingclassradio.com.
What happens when we play outside? We become healthier, both mentally and physically. We become more creative and more focused. We connect with nature, each other, and ourselves. Let's Take This Outside, a new podcast hosted by me, Marianne Iveson, an aspiring outdoor athlete and nature lover. I speak to athletes, outdoor professionals, and scientists about their connection to nature, how it affects their performance and everyday life. Let's Take This Outside, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, and at letstakethisoutside.ca.
Another Sound Off Media Company podcast.